Let's play some cards.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, starring Team Poker Stars pro Dennis Phillips with Paul Harrah's. Brought to you by Poker Stars and the Poker Players Alliance.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
You got it.
Now, from the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Jackpot.
Thank you, sir. May I have another?
Welcome to show number 115, coming to you from the feature table of the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, which over the last 13 days has been the site of one of the biggest tournaments, in fact, the biggest tournament series in Missouri history. I am Paul Harrah, sitting alongside Team Poker Stars pro Dennis Phillips. Hi, Dennis. How are you?
Doing quite well, Paul.
And also joining us here at the final table is a man who's been our special guest all throughout this weekend and who played in the main event and did his Fossil Man Poker Training Seminar over the weekend, Greg Raymer. Hi, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. I just ran in. Sorry about that. I was out to lunch with friends of mine, since I am from the area.
Yeah.
And they just dropped me off this second.
Well, we're glad to have you on the show again, and as a Parkway South graduate, welcome back to St. Louis. Now, before we get to anything else, who here has cashed in the last 13 days? I see no hands.
Wait, I have, just not... It wasn't here. It was within 13 days, but it wasn't here.
Oh, that's true. Before coming here, Greg was playing at the Hollywood Casino in Cincinnati. But all of us went over for the entire World Series of Poker circuit event. While we're doing the show, they are doing two final tables. One is of the final ring event, the Monday noon $355 no-limit hold'em event, which is down to its final 10. And also, the Sunday main event, the $1,600 buy-in, is down to four players who are headed for a seat in the national championship and first prize of $142,000. And I was just over there minutes before we came in and saw a guy who all St. Louis poker players know, Columbia Phil, Phil Stelzer, is one of the guys left in the final four.
One of the, a couple of days ago, actually. He sat at my table, sat to my right, and I got to watch him bust out of that particular one. Mm-hmm. Not through a bad play or anything, but just the way it happened. And he told me he'd already run deep in two other tournaments, and he was doing great, and he just wanted a good, solid run in the main event to try and get that Player of the Year status.
Well,
now he's at least fourth.
At least fourth. He finished fourth in ring event number one.
Yep.
The very first No Limit Hold'em event here at the World Series of Poker circuit event, and is in there now, and by virtue of coming in fourth in this event, has qualified for the national championship free roll.
That's why I walked over by the table, he bounced up and ran over to me as soon as the guy busted out in fifth, and he said, that's it. As long as I finish fourth or higher, I have enough points, I will be out there at Caesars.
Yep, that's the $1 million free roll that's coming up in May, just before the rest of the World Series of Poker circuit event goes on. So we got two final tables going on as we're doing the show live here this afternoon. And let me mention some of the other people who had good runs this year. Last year we talked about the first few events, so let's catch up, starting with ring event number five, Hugh Drummond, young guy from Vancouver, who also came in third in the first ring event, took down ring event number five. Kui Nguyen of Norman, Oklahoma, took down ring event six, the 555 no limit hold'em. The next day, ring event number seven was taken down by Keith Wernley of Montgomery, Alabama. Ari Engel, who's a poker player and trainer, came in third in that event, and I played with Ari in the main event here on Sunday, and he's going to join us later on this hour to talk about the life of a professional poker player and poker trainer. He worked with Joseph Chung, who was the third-place finisher in the main event, one of the November 9 last year, so we'll talk to Ari. And I want to ask both of you guys about something from that ring event that Keith won. Keith is very good friends with a local guy by the name of Darren Dwyer, who made it to ninth place there. So these two guys were both at the final table together. Now, in all the events that you guys have played, have you made it to a final table of a big event, a ring event or something else, with somebody who you're really close to, and does that affect how you play, Greg?
Yeah, I have. In fact, the one I'm thinking of, it wasn't a huge event, but it was actually a buddy of mine in Vegas. It was a smaller event at the Golden Nugget, and I had actually put him in, you know, given him like a 20% free roll.
Yeah.
And then I actually, we started the final table 10-handed, but only 9 people got paid, and I called his shove and knocked him out in 10th place. And he was really mad at me for a while.
Yeah.
He was like, how could you do that? You know, I mean, we're friends and blah, blah, you know, and I'm just like, because it's irrelevant at this point, you know. You're not my friend while we're playing the game of poker. And, you know, quite a while later, like over a year later, he finally came up to me one time and he says, you were right. I was wrong. You know, the fact that you put me in, the fact that we were friends should have zero impact upon your decision.
Mm-hmm.
But he was really mad at first.
Well, of course, in a tournament, if you want to win, you have to knock out everybody, whether they're related to you, they're good friends to you, or somebody you've never met before.
Well, it probably hurt more that, like, I called his shove with ace 9, and he had ace 10, and then I caught a 9 on him, too.
So it was, oh, and the rest of the story
comes
out.
It was a bad
out.
Beat as well, you know. And I didn't ever, I could have just lied to him, I guess, and said, well, I knew you had better than this. I figured I'd give you a good chance to double up.
Yeah, there you go.
But
you
I didn't, you know, feel like lying to him on, you know, that. And then I would be the bad guy for lying.
Yeah.
As opposed to... But I've had other times where I've been at final tables with people that I'm, you know, good friends with, and, you know, it's, I wish them well, unless, as long as I'm out of the pot.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. But, I have had it several times the same way. One that comes to mind, Barry Shulman, he and I started out at the same table of a Venetian deep stack, and he took 3/4 of my chips.
Mm-hmm.
And we were laughing and joking about it and everything like that. Well, a day and a half later, we're at the same table again. This time it's the final table.
Mm-hmm.
I think I went out fifth or sixth in that one. He came in second in that particular one. But it was kind of unique that we started out at the same table, and he just kicked my tail
mm-hmm.
in a couple of hands. Of course, he flopped a set, which never hurts.
Yeah.
And then we ended up...
Sometimes it hurts. We learned that in this main event from you.
Okay, wrong phrase, guys. We don't want to go there right now.
But we're going to get to that in just a second.
That wound is still raw?
Oh, that wound is raw.
I'm over it. Yeah, it's been like a whole night's sleep. I'm always over it by then. I thought you'd be the same.
But this notion of being with people at the same table, there were two brothers who made the final table of ring event number 2 here, Don and Daryl Swentick, both Texans, who finished 4th and 7th in that event. Here are two guys who spent their entire lives together.
That's nothing. I know of a guy by the name of the Grinder
mm-hmm.
who took his own brother out of a major event in Vegas.
In the 50K last year.
The 50K, yes.
Yeah.
On a sort of questionable play.
I agree. Yeah.
So there is no love at the table.
So, you know, in a tournament, again, you got to knock everybody out. Does it change things when you're in a cash game? You know, Dennis and I, when we're sitting down in the same cash game, we rarely, in fact, I can't even remember the last time it happened to us, that we play big pots against each other.
But that's because we know each other too well. You literally will look up at each other and go, not a chance, and muck our cards.
Yeah.
So, big difference.
Do you have that when you're playing in a cash game, Greg?
I don't actually get the chance to play a lot of cash games. I mean, I'm not adverse to playing cash games, but... The truth is, when I play cash, I prefer something other than hold'em or PLO.
Mm-hmm.
And nowadays, no limit hold'em and PLO are, you know, almost 90% of all the cash games you'll find.
Right.
And when it's not no limit hold'em or PLO, it's usually like really low limit stud. So, you know, like in a room like this, you know, you come in and look at the games on the list, and it'll be like several tables of 1-2 no limit, and then, you know, one or more tables of 2-5, and one or maybe two tables of 5-10 or 10-20 or higher,
mm-hmm.
and then maybe a couple different limits of PLO, and then it's like 2-4 stud.
Right.
You know, $2, $4 limit stud or something like that will be the other game available. So, you know, it's like I'm not going – I don't really go out of my way to play cash games, so mm-hmm. I just don't get to do it. And but when I do play, it's like I'm in Vegas during the World Series. I have time available. And now I'm playing like 400, 800 mixed games.
Yep.
And I usually know everyone at the table. So whether we're friends or whether I really don't like that guy, I'm still doing everything I can to take his money.
It's business.
Yeah.
It's just business.
And I will tell you, too, that if they ever have a major event and have a flipple draw game.
Fipple draw.
Greg will be there.
So. Well, I was just thinking that for Don and Daryl Swentick, you know, you're brothers, which means you've had sibling rivalries your entire life. So, of course, you're going to go at each other as hard as possible because then you're going to, you know, it won't come up again until the next Thanksgiving dinner. The whole family gets together. So anyway, we left off with ring event number 8, which was taken down by Robert Ellerman of Grain Valley, Missouri. And now they're up to the main event, which is going on here. We had 449 players show up. 142,000 will be first prize. Some of the longtime local regulars who cashed in this, Guy Mondello, Sam Devers, David Potter, a guy by the name of Terry Stoldrer, who is known by everybody here as Snowman for the card protector he uses. And actually yesterday when they got to day two, right after they came back from the dinner break, there was a very odd hand. Chad Holloway of Poker News has been covering this for that website. The action folded around to Kyle Cartwright, who has been the chip leader pretty much since late in day one and still is now at the final table. It's folded around to him in late position. He makes it 28,000. The blinds are 6 and 12. He makes it 28. Snowman then shoves all in from the small blind for 460,000. Cartwright makes the call. Cartwright's got ace-king. Terry has king-nine of clubs. Now, you know Terry.
Very well.
Terry makes the Tournament of Champions here almost every month.
Mm-hmm.
He plays lots and lots of tournaments here. He's one of those guys who is a steady, consistent performer and has a very tight image.
When I won my seat out to the World Series, do you know who came in second, who I beat heads up?
Snowman.
There you go.
Yeah. So to make that kind of an overshove in a situation like that with King Nine of Clubs, yeah, he's always had a very tight image, but it's not like he's short. Blinds are 6 and 12. He's got 460.
Yeah.
I don't know. He was at my table when I got eliminated. The only hand I remember, because I remember the Snowman card protector.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I don't know what he had because he didn't have to reach showdown, but someone raised and he re-raised like half of his stack, and then they called and he shoved the flop and they folded.
Mm-hmm.
So at the time I was, at first I was thinking like, why such a huge raise, you know, for half your stack? You know, you don't need to make it that big.
Yep.
And then when the other guy just called and then like check folded the flop, then I was thinking more about the other guy because kind of like, well, what the heck were you thinking?
Yeah, I know.
I don't put in half the chips and then fold on the flop.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought he was going to do a stop and go play for sure since he was first to act, and that's why he only called. And then when he checked, I was like, well, he must have flopped the nuts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or effectively the nuts, at least like top two pair or better. And then he folded, and I was just like, you know, wow. You know, so all those chips went to the Snowman. But, you know, so again, it was a hand where I thought there was kind of strange stuff going on. But the first strange thing was, like, why was Snowman's re-raise so much and for half of his stack?
Yeah.
You know, and I didn't know him at the time, and I still can't really say I know him since I only played with him for a short period yesterday.
Right.
But, again, you know, I saw, you know, a lot of unusual plays. I made a few unusual plays myself, but it's like I knew the reasoning. So, I mean, he might have had a really good reason because maybe he knew stuff about that guy I didn't know.
Yep.
You know, things like that. So that's always, you know, when you see something strange, you can't just assume it's because the other player doesn't know what he's doing.
Right. No, I don't assume that for either of these guys. I think that perhaps in this situation, Kyle Cartwright had been opening a lot of pots. Here he is doing it in late position. Terry thinks, you know what, I've probably got a pretty tight image here at this point in the tournament, and I'm just going to, you know, make this kid lay it down and stop it.
Because,
you know, I've played in several of these tournaments with some young gun who comes to the table, you know, one, two, three, four levels in, comes to the table, starts raising pots, and everybody's a little scared and doesn't do anything until somebody stands up to him. Maybe that's what Terry was doing there. I don't know.
Well, it could be. And maybe he was, you know, correct that he had a tight image and all that. But to be honest, if you spend most of your time playing online tournaments, you kind of learn that you just never, ever fold ace-king pre-flop.
Yeah.
I mean, it just, only like maybe in super satellites or, you know, unusual structures, you know, or maybe on the bubble, you know, another, you can find some strange spots. But for the most part, you know, even a hand like ace-queen or even ace-jack just doesn't get folded much online, and it's, because it's usually wrong.
Yeah, there's no
to
way
fold it because people are so aggressive.
There's no way he's laying down ace king there in that situation.
So I mean, it was just maybe that was he might have been right in the sense that maybe he's like, well, Kyle is going to fold 80-90% of the time here, but this was one of the 10 or 20% of the hands that he wasn't going to lay down.
I look at Kyle, probably had to be one of the top 10 hands he's going to play, something like that. 15 hands at probably the most. Other than that, he's probably going to lay it down.
Mm-hmm.
There's 50,000 almost in the pot. You know, by the time you add it up, he's got 450, so it's a nice little bonus. It's not a horrendous play. I would not have made the play. I think he could have done it with a lot less. But
that's the thing. You know. I was going to say, the problem with the play is that you know, if Kyle made it 24 and you've got over 400, if he just re-raised just a normal like three times that bet to 72, Kyle probably folds almost completely as often.
Right.
Because now he can't come in and say, like, well, I'll try to flop a set because 72,000 is too much. You know, that's 1/6 of the snowman stack.
Right.
So when it's that much of the effective stack, he's not going to call that raise with the small pairs and the suited connectors or the ace with a low suited kicker or the kind of hands that you normally might call to hope to hit a flop.
Yeah.
So he's only going to play if he thinks he has the best hand. And now if he comes back over the top,
exactly,
then the snowman can say, okay, I know King 9 is no good. I know this kid isn't. Unless he just thinks Kyle is a not thinking young aggressive player, because some of those kids will just say, oh, you know, the bet sizing here, he put in 72. If I go all in for 420, that's enough to maybe make him fold. And so they'll just shove with every single hand that they made the first raise with. And the snowman didn't want to talk himself into calling in a spot like that. So instead he decided, I'll just shove it in now. And I have seen people make those kinds of plays just because they're kind of afraid that I don't want to leave myself making a difficult decision.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. We'll never know for sure. Maybe there's some rationale behind it. These are definite possibilities. In my opinion, if you want to make a stand there, maybe even a little more. You could put 80,000 out there. Pick a number. I don't care what it is. But somewhere in that range definitely should take down the pot, you know, 3/4 of the time minimum.
Yep.
Or you could click back. do the min re-raise.
Yeah, you go. That's sometimes even scarier.
Exactly.
Now, one other thing I want to say about this as we come to the conclusion of the World Series of Poker Circuit event here at Harrah's St. Louis is that I really hope that over the last 2 weeks, the people of the Missouri Gaming Commission have been paying attention to how big this event has been. This has been every single tournament that they've done here, except for a couple of the smaller 4 o'clock events. Every noon ring event and every 7 o'clock $120 tournament has seen its number of entrants go up by about 20% over last year. We had 843 in our first event. We had 449 in the final event, the main event, on Sunday. I would hope that they are paying attention and realizing that tournament poker can be a big thing in St. Louis. The problem is, because they force the casinos to only do poker on what they call the gaming floor, it's not like other venues where if you go to Tunica or Hammond or the Hollywood Casino or elsewhere, they can have a ballroom or a big conference room where you can set up all the poker tables you want and have big tournaments there. Here, Harrah's was forced to take slot machines off of, you know, half of their no-smoking area and about a third of the other area and squeezing it in, which meant that players had to sit among some slot machine noise and, in some cases, among people who were smoking, which for people like Doug Carley, who's a touring tournament pro, he couldn't take the smoke. He's got terrible allergies. He's used to playing in a non-smoking environment. What do you think about all that?
Well, of course. They've changed some laws recently in Indiana. They've allowed them now to have a tournament play definitely off the supervised floor even, so they can have it anywhere they want. That just came forward. I know we had some huge turnouts here, and that was with a lot of competition. The Hollywood Casino, what was their first event? 1,700 or something they had in that first event?
Yeah.
Monstrous. And that was in direct competition to this one. So poker is here, guys. Poker is big, and it is growing even more.
Yep.
And they need to get in. If we're going to compete in St. Louis with these other markets, we have to have the same opportunities as the other markets.
And it would be nice to have more than one big event here per year. The circuit event is a great thing and brings in lots and lots of people. Why can't we do another one in the fall?
There you go.
Because we don't have the venue for it right now. That's part of the problem. Do either of you want to talk about how you got knocked out of the main event?
You know, I was perfectly, you know, standard plays. I raised with ace queen, ace of clubs, and an offsuit queen, and the flop came king jack six, all clubs.
Mm-hmm.
So I have the overcard, the gut shot straight, you know, the 10, and the nut flush draw. So, you know, it went all in on the flop. My opponent had queen eight of clubs.
Mm-hmm.
So he called my raise with queen eight of clubs. He flopped the second nuts. You know, and then just in case I was ever going to get away from the hand, which I probably wasn't anyways because I had that nut flush draw, the turn was the 10, giving me Broadway. So I had the nut straight, so I beat everything except for a flush. And if he has a flush, well, then I have 7 outs to beat him anyways. So it really wasn't possible to get away from my hand. If I had ace-queen without a club, then it's it would be horrible for me to lose those chips.
Yep.
So that was half my stack. And then, you know, I just stayed at that position mostly. And about a half an hour later, I had a spot where a loose, aggressive chip leader raised, and he got called by one other player. And then I, perfect squeeze opportunity, and I had just the right number of chips for it. And I shoved in with 10-8 suited. And but the kid who had been raising like three times in orbit had kings this time.
Mm-hmm.
And then actually I flopped a pair and a straight draw, turned a flush draw, you know, to see the offsuit deuce on the river. So I was like taunted and teased as much as possible, you know, without ever actually taking the lead in the hand.
Yeah.
So very standard. I mean, you know, I was never going to get away from the ace queen hand because I had that ace of clubs.
Right.
And here's this perfect squeeze opportunity. And if they all fold, then I'm, you know, building my stack like 30% without even seeing a flop. And if I get called, often it'll be like an ace-king, you know, kind of like the snowman's hand there that he ran into.
Yep.
And I have two live cards, and I would have beaten ace-king, and I would have beaten ace-queen, and I would have beaten, you know, half of the pocket pairs that my opponent might have called with as well. So, you know, it's just, you know, oops.
Yep, that's the way poker works, yeah. Dennis?
Yeah, mine was actually a fairly standard play, too. 2 hours into day two.
And by the way, at the end of day one, both of these guys were in the top 10 in chips. We had about 92 players who made it to day two. Dennis and Greg were both top 10 in chips.
Yeah. When I sat down at my table, it was quite interesting because the number 1, 3, 4, 7, and 9 were all at my table in
wow.
chip count.
Wow.
So a tremendous amount of chips. I was fourth, and I was third best at my table. So, you know, that was a little bit interesting. But, yeah, no kidding. Hey, opportunity for chips. Anyhow, 2 hours later, I'm on the big blind. Gentleman who has not been overly aggressive, I have to admit, he's playing solid, but he was a chip leader, had over 300,000 in front of him. Made a standard raise. The blinds were at 2,000, 4,000. He made it 11,000. Got a smooth call from the guy behind him, so there's 22 there, plus the other end, so there's over 30,000 in the pot. I've got 4,000 in already. It's going to cost me 7 more to call. I look down at 4-4. I'm not going to lay down a 4-4 there,
mm-hmm.
not for that kind of pot odds.
Mm-hmm.
It's over 30,000 in with 7 to call. I make the call, puts approximately 40,000 in the pot. Flop comes 10-8-4. That is the first set I flopped in a day and a half.
Mm-hmm.
I have happy feet.
You say that like it's unusual. Do you usually flop a lot more sets than that?
Three an hour. You know how it is, of course. Your standard play for everybody.
Yeah.
But I have
three
my
a nice. Month. I don't know if I get 3 a month.
Yeah. Anyhow, I'm trying to decide. I know the guy. I know exactly that no matter if he has ace-king there, he's going to make a continuation bet. He has the chips to do it. He's, you know, standard play, solid player. I make the check. He bets 30,000 out, three-quarters of the pot. The other gentleman that made the smooth call folds, comes back to me. I'm trying to decide how I can get more chips out of him because if he has an ace-king or an ace-queen going against me with my stack, he's probably going to lay it down. There isn't a danger board. There are three different suits there. I'm not going to screw around, though. No, not a problem. I'm going to find it where I am. I make it 75,000,
mm-hmm.
which not quite half of the chips I have remaining, but getting close to it. So he looks at me, looks down at his chips, and says, I'm all in. At this stage, I'm down from the 70 to the other. I've got about 120,000 in front of me. I have 40-45% of my chips in the pot. I can't get away from a set there.
Yep.
So it all goes in. I turn over fours. He turns over 2 8s. He stands up and is very, very happy.
Sure.
And 2 blank cards later, it's over.
Mm-hmm.
But standard play. I mean, it's set over set. Very hard to get away from it. 10 high board. I mean, you know.
If you had folded, I'd have slapped you.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Dennis and I talked about this, and he said, is there any way I can get away from that? Well, you're never folding the set there. If you smooth call the flop, well, now there's going to be about 90 or something thousand in the pot, and you've got 140, how is it never going to go in on the turn in the river anyway?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's going to go in on the turn, essentially, when he bets.
Well, there wasn't even a danger flop. It's not like it flopped 2 clubs or some suited ones out there, connected ones or anything. It was just 10-8-4 rainbow.
Yeah, set
Sorry,
over set.
It's going in.
Yeah,
the thought of getting away from it shouldn't even go through your mind.
Oh,
when you flop a set, unless there's like 3 to a flush, 3 to a straight, or both
right.
at the same time, the thought of getting away from it, you know, my only thought is how do I get as much money as possible?
Well, that's exactly what I was thinking.
And if my opponent has the overset, FML next hand
or
next tournament, as it may be.
Right. So. Other pros that were here besides Dennis and Greg, Dwight Pilgrim was here. Dwight, who we all saw on the World Poker Tour broadcast just a few weeks ago, busted out of the NAPT event in the Mohegan Sun on Saturday night. Sunday morning, gets on the first flight out of Connecticut to get here in time for the main event. Bus out of here on day one, and is now back at Mohegan Sun playing in the 10K Bounty Shootout 1A today. So he's at least put some frequent flyer miles in. Nadia Magnus was here. She was one of the loose cannons last season on the big game on PokerStars TV. The Hinkle brothers were here. TJ Cloutier was here. Amarillo Slim was here. Brandon Steven was here, who came in 10th last year, bubbled the November 9 at the main event of the World Series of Poker. And I didn't run into Brandon at all, but he emailed me what happened. Did you hear how he busted?
I talked to him for a while. He went over and played blackjack for a while afterwards. He said he couldn't play any more poker after it.
Got it in with Kyle Cartwright, who is the chip leader in all of this. This is one of those hands that you hit to become the chip leader.
Yep.
Brandon had aces, and Kyle had king, queen, and, of course, catches two queens, and that's it.
All in preflop?
Yes.
All in preflop.
Yeah, and Brandon would
LDO.
Have been, yeah, he finished 31st in it. He would have been the chip leader had he won. It was a $600,000 pot.
Yeah.
All in preflop.
Would have been the chip leader with about 30 left. And one other thing I want to talk about before we go to the break here is in two of the tournaments that I played, of the six that I played, two in particular stick out of my mind, not for any hands that I had. I mean, I was essentially card dead. In the main event, I went 2.5 hours and won one hand. Just nothing going on. But in two of the events that I played, there were young, aggressive players, and I don't mind that, who had no idea what table etiquette was supposed to be like. There were guys who were showing each other their cards as they were folding, which you're not allowed to do in any tournament. One of the guys kept talking when he was heads up with somebody, trying to intimidate them, and we know about the Jamie Gold rule, which we've talked about. I know Greg doesn't like that rule, but it is a rule, so you're not supposed to talk to intimidate or to entice your opponent to call you. Twice I saw them laughing at somebody who was eliminated. While the rest of us are getting up and shaking their hands, they're laughing their butts off because another young player had taken somebody out. Or things that just made it seem like, you know, nobody had ever taught them just basic, simple human manners. And I was curious if you guys run into this in the tournaments that you play, particularly from younger players. We've all sat next to jerks, but I was surprised to see so much of it in this tournament.
Well, I've seen jerks of all ages. I saw a gentleman that was older than I out at the Venetian one day that I would be happy if I never saw him at another poker table.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen people berate waitresses, and I've seen a lot of that. But I will tell you that at least 90% of the poker players, probably 95% of the poker players, are very good people, do a lot of the etiquette. They treat other people right.
Absolutely.
You very, very seldom find it. And I'm a little surprised if they were that poorly on it that somebody didn't say something to them.
I did a couple of times say to the dealer, you know, they're not allowed to do that. They're not allowed to show each other's cards. And the dealer would nod to me, and, they would quiet down for a few hands or something and not do anything. And about the third time, I was about ready to call the floor. I didn't, but I should have, because at that point, I don't know how it works. Do you get a warning? Do you get a penalty?
If you want to get the floor involved, my recommendation in anything like this is because you don't really need it to be personal between you and them.
Mm-hmm.
So rather than even say anything to them, like if the next dealer is coming in and he's standing behind your dealer and if you're not in that last hand, you could stand up and whisper to the new dealer and say, like seats 4 and 5 are showing each other their cards and they're making inappropriate comments and I would like you to be careful to make them follow the rules.
Mm-hmm.
If that's not sufficient, or maybe because you're worried that, the next dealer, you'd have to do it every time, then just when you fold a hand, walk away from the table to a floor man who's a table or two away.
Mm-hmm.
And just, again, say it to him, so that he will now come over at some point, observe them a little bit, and then step up and give them the warning.
Yep.
So that the next time they do it, they will get the one-round penalty or whatever is the appropriate penalty for what they're doing.
Yeah.
And that way it's not like you getting into it with them in case they're a real jerk who thinks he needs to, challenge you to go out to the garage, or, go to the parking lot kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause even if it's someone that you can easily beat the crap out of, that doesn't mean you want to get involved in that.
I don't know.
Now, I saw several penalties out here. One of them was kind of funny. The guy was given a one-hand penalty, And he came over to me and said, well, I guess it was worth it, but I'm really embarrassed. He caught the nuts on the river, and the guy checked ahead of him, and he was so happy, he just jumped up and turned his cards over. So he checked on the river with the nuts.
Uh-huh.
And they said, you can't do that. And he says, all right, give me a penalty.
See, I think that's a horrible rule also. I mean, it's truly horrible because I have seen that rule enforced half a dozen times maybe,
yeah.
And I've never once seen a situation where it was not blindingly obvious that the person just
exactly.
didn't really realize. It was either that, the guy was so excited, or normally it was like they had misread their hand and didn't realize had the nuts. Like, they're announcing one pair as they turned their hand over because they thought they had like 10-8 of hearts, and they paired the 10, mm-hmm. and they didn't know they had 8-9 of hearts, you know, for a flush or a straight flush or the nut straight or whatever it was, you know. So they didn't realize they had the nuts because they misread their hand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now they're getting a penalty on top of it. And I'm like, that guy just saved me money by checking the nuts. I might have paid him off. You know, you can't give the guy a penalty on top of that for, you know, being, you know, unobservant.
But the reason the rule is there is so there isn't collusion.
Well, yeah.
But I think it's a useless reason because if you and I are going to collude, we're just not going to do it in such a stupid, obvious way. You know, I'm not going to check the nuts so that I don't take. I mean, if you and I are colluding, I don't have to check the nuts because since I'm going to win the pot anyways, all I have to do is make a bet that and have some physical movement like a baseball sign. That, like, when I, you know, like, rub the back of my left hand and then bet, that means I have a huge hand, don't call. Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to dump chips to you, partner. I have a big hand and I have to bet it.
Mm-hmm.
So we would have, you know, baseball signals, you know, rubbing your nose and all that stuff going on.
Yep.
We wouldn't have to do anything that broke any of these anti-collusion rules. I also don't like, you know, the, like, you know, you can't show your cards to someone and the no-talking Jamie Gold rule and all that. Again, you, as long as it's heads up, even if I am doing it to take advantage of you because you're a weaker player, I mean, it's the same thing. It's just a different sort of the same way I take advantage of you already. It's like you play hands you shouldn't play. I take advantage of that by raising you and isolating the rest of the field, mm-hmm. you know, and all the other things that we do to take advantage of our opponent's mistakes.
You notice that he looked right at me when he talked about weak play and playing hands you shouldn't play? He didn't look at Dennis. He looked at me.
I can insult you and get away with it because I'm more likely to run into Dennis at future big tournaments. You know?
That's Greg Raymer joining Team PokerStars Pro Dennis Phillips. I'm Paul Harris here at the final table at Harris St. Louis. When we come back, we'll talk with Ari Engel, who was here for the main event and several others and cashed in one big one and does some poker training as well. By the way, what's coming up next here at Harris is a chance for you to go to Vegas, win a trip to one of 9 exciting Vegas destinations, including Planet Hollywood and Caesar's Palace and Harrah's and Paris and Bally's and the Rio and the Flamingo. To do that, you come in and swipe your total rewards card here at Harrah's St. Louis Friday, Saturday, and Sunday between noon and 8. You get a free game piece, and you can win instantly or collect the set for great prizes, including that Vegas vacation. And for every 100 base reward credits you earn playing the slots or the table games or even coming in and playing in the poker room here, you will get an additional shot at that Vegas vacation. Go to the Total Rewards Center, and they will give you complete details. And also, if you want to qualify for the main event this year, this Saturday is another one of the qualifiers, just like the one Dennis won at the end of 07 to get into the 08 main event. $200 buy-in at noon and 3 p.m. on Saturday. These are the double shootouts where all you got to do is beat 18 people and you have a seat in the main event. For more information on that, go to harrahs.com/STL poker. This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show on 590 The Fan KFNS and KFNS.com and our podcast via iTunes and on thechipleader.com.
Kits, does your granny lend you money? Well, this granny does. And right now, calling 800-GRANNY-8 will get you $50,000 for just $238 per month. Call 800-GRANNY-8. Get a low fixed rate and take a 3-month payment break. That's 90 payment-free days to get your finances straight. Our customers are saving hundreds per month, and our friendly loan officers make it easy. Call 800-GRANNY-8 or apply online at granny8.com.
Great mortgage rates, call 800-GRANNY-8.
Welcome back to the Final Table. We're still here. We've got Greg Raymer with us. I'm Dennis Phillips, and Paul Harris joining us right now.
I was just outside checking on the final table action of the main event.
Okay, what's going on out there?
I don't know his name, but one of the players has doubled through Kyle Cartwright twice.
Twice?
The short stack has doubled twice, maybe even a third time. I don't know what's going on in the hand that they're in the middle of. They're still down to four players, but it's possible that they don't have anybody who's the way dominant chip leader at that point. So we'll find out some more information. Anyway, this portion of the show is brought to you by PokerStars.net.
Have you looked at this new game they've got now? It's called the Game Your Life promotion. It's a $100,000 package. You get to go, look at this, the sporting event of your choice anywhere in the world. So I don't care if you're a polo fan, if you're the World Series, if you want to go to the Super Bowl, if you want to go to any event in the world, any sporting event. That's what they do. You get to take all your friends.
Can I just interrupt you? I'm going to set an over-under for the number of people who will play on PokerStars to win seats to a polo event at one half.
Oh, wait. I was doing a TV show in Argentina.
Yeah.
And they had this huge polo match. And so now you could basically say, like, you could pick that polo match just because you want a free trip to Buenos Aires.
Well, that's true. I'm going to keep the over-under at one half, and I'm going to take the under. Back to you, Dennis.
Thanks a lot there. Okay. But the other thing about it, though, you get to take your friends with you. Can you imagine how many friends you would suddenly have if you want a trip to anywhere in the world, to any event you wanted to see? What's been your lifelong dream? Do you want to go see a Super Bowl? Do you want to go see? And they're talking prime time seats at these events. The time of your life. Unbelievable. You get to go on there to PokerStars.net. Do any of the free rolls. There's over $1 million in free rolls for the players out there. The promotion's running for the next 6 weeks. All you have to do is qualify for the weekly free throw, through the daily free rolls, and so on, all the way up there, and you would have the chance to do that. The Game of Your Life package. Those winners are able to choose any event they want to go, anywhere in the world, take as many friends as they want, and have all the travel and accommodations included. This is a package like I've never seen before. Go to PokerStars.net. Play on the free rolls, and that could be your package.
All right. By the way, it's Ron Segney was the fourth player there. He was involved in a hand with Kyle Cartwright and Ashish Boyapati, who's the other player in there, along with Columbia Phil Stelzer. They are the final four in the main event here at the World Series of Poker Circuit event. Now, one of the guys who was here playing in the main event and also playing in other events during this circuit event here is a guy by the name of Ari Engel, who is a 28-year-old pro who is also in the poker training business. He worked with Joseph Chong, who came in third last year at the main event. He has done pretty well in circuit events of his own. Ari took down a circuit event at Harrah's in Atlantic City in 2007, took down the Heads Up event at Caesars in 2009, and was at the table when I busted out after a two-and-a-half-hour drought on Sunday afternoon. Ari, welcome to the final table.
Thank you very much, Paul. Great to be here.
Was this your first time in St. Louis for this circuit event?
No, I actually came in last year for the main event also, but didn't have any success. But I really enjoyed playing in St. Louis this week. The people were extremely friendly. It was a great atmosphere at Harrah's there, and I hope to be back again next year.
How did the action here compare to other circuit events, since you have played several of them?
Yeah, at the beginning of the year, I tried to make an effort to play as many as I could to try and get into that 100-person national championship. You know, some people label it a free roll. I don't really like to call it that, since that's not extremely accurate. But, you know, a lot of these stops, which are, you know, not in Las Vegas, not in Los Angeles, do tend to have a little bit weaker play as a whole. And, you know, it also tends to make the game, besides for, you know, potentially boosting my ROI, it tends to make the game a little more enjoyable, since you don't have all these, you know, cranky old pros that just, you know, play all day, every day, and just don't really see the enjoyment in poker anymore. So I like to play. You know, I've had quite a bit of success in, you know, places like Council Bluffs, and, you know, I do like to play in, you know, maybe a little more remote places when it comes to poker.
Yeah. Well, anyhow, I think I've played against you in the Venetian there, if I'm not mistaken, out there a couple of times on one of those deep stacks.
It's definitely possible. Yeah, I do tend to play also. I live in Vegas, so I do play, you know, quite a bit in Vegas too.
Got a question for you. I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit. All right, you're a poker trainer. Somebody walks up to you and they say, "All right, give me five things about poker that I need to know. Five key things that, you know, you find the most players you know, don't follow, don't lose, don't observe, don't something like that? What are key things that you look for in a player to try and see how their game is?
I'm going to modify your question a little bit just because I play about 98% of the time tournaments, so I'm going to just address it when it comes to tournament poker. And I guess
that's
the
fair.
Easiest answer is five times aggression. The more aggression you have, the better off it's going to be. But, I mean, some of the other things that I would say is, you know, emotional control is just so huge. I see people just all the time lose their control. And, you know, this game is so hard to win that even if you have, you know, a 15 or 20% ROI over the long run, if once a week you let yourself go on tilt and you blow, you know, let's say you play the Sunday tournaments and you have 10 or 15 tournaments being played all Sunday, and after two or three you go on tilt, and now the rest of the 12 just go down the drain and there's, you know, $2,000. Well, you know, at the end of the year, if you're doing that semi-frequently, you're just not going to be able to win in this game, even if you do have tremendous skills. You know, some of the other things are, you know, the common things people talk about. I'm a huge bankroll management nit. I really believe that bankroll management is so important. The way I look at a tournament is, you know, let's say I'm playing a $50 tournament when it starts, and, you know, the standard thing is, you know, just to keep it easy, is 10% of the field pays. Well, the way I look at it is, when you make the money, you're no longer in a $50 tournament. You're now in a $500 tournament, since only 10% of the field is left. And maybe when you make the final table, you might be in the equivalent of a $3,000 sit and go. To me, there's no point taking shots at the beginning of a tournament, because tournaments are natural shots. So I really encourage myself and I encourage my students to, you know, play within their means, and it allows you, and it goes together with that, you know, aggression that I so highly value, because if you're playing within your means and you're playing within your bankroll, it makes it much easier to make the correct plays and to not play a scared style.
You talk a little bit about focusing on the game, and I know you've worked on this with some of your students. It was interesting to me when we were playing on Sunday, you know, you're sitting there with the big AE logo on your chest, which people mm-hmm. are always going to ask you about, and you started yep. out with your earbuds in, but pretty soon you're involved in conversations with a guy named Mike who's on your right and a couple of guys who are on your left, and I'm chiming in a little bit. How do you mm-hmm. maintain focus on the game when you're involved in all that conversation at the table at the same time? Dennis and I, and Greg too, have talked about having to pay attention to everything that's going on at the table. Do you find that to be too much of a distraction sometimes?
I guess it's possible sometimes I do find that to be a distraction. On the other hand, I come from a background of mainly an online poker player. And, you know, while I'm not the kind of guy that plays 10 or 12 tournaments at a time, I do play probably four or five tournaments very often. And so when I'm playing live and it's one table going, I feel like at a huge advantage, and I feel it's pretty easy to keep track of what's going on and keep a good grasp and, you know, pay full concentration. And I, you know, because I don't play live all the time, and when I do go out to play live, I try and focus, you know, a large amount of my attention on the game. I don't watch the TV, you know. Well, I might engage in, you know, casual conversations with people around the table. I'm still really focused heavily on the action, and I try not to let anything slip through my mind.
Are you still working with Joseph now in his game?
No,
keeping together?
I'm no longer working with him. He, you know, I kind of worked with him a lot when he was starting out, and he's gotten to the stage where I would love to be able to work with him, but maybe on the reverse kind of way, where he would be able to help me a ton. We're still friends, and we still talk every now and again, but his game has been elevated to such a high level that, you know, like I said, I think I could get a lot more out of the relationship than he would. So, you know, that's a great thing for me to have students that, you know, exceed my results and exceed, I think, my level of play is something I'm really proud of.
Talking with Ari Engel, poker trainer, here on the final table with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris. Greg Raymer is sitting here with us as well. Ari, by the way, is online at ariengel.com. When people find out that you trained Joseph Chung, I'm sure the first question you usually get is, are you the one who told him to shove to six bet with A7 against Jonathan Duhamel? I know you get that all the time, but I want to go back to the very first thing you said when Dennis asked you about tips. You said aggression, aggression, aggression. I think Joseph Chong last year was the personification of aggression, and that's what got him to that final three, isn't it?
100%. Obviously that last play has its merits and its demerits, and, you know, I'd like to think that, if I was in the same situation, I probably wouldn't have made that play. But, you know, whether you like it or not, the bottom line is you got to give the guy credit for having the heart to pull it off at the final table of the main event on the biggest stage of the world. He analyzed the play, and he thought that it was the right play. And that's the main thing, and he was willing to go with his read and make what he thought was the correct play. And that's all you can do. You know, is a player going to be right 100% of the time? Definitely not. But if you have the courage to stand by your reads and stand by your convictions and ultimately make the play that you believe to be correct, that's what's going to separate, people. I give him a ton of credit for being able to do that on the biggest stage with that much money on the line.
Well, for our readers, and a lot of them don't play at this kind of level or anything like that, what advice could you give them, books to read, chat rooms to be involved with, schools to attend? Now, are most of yours one-on-one, or do you do a classroom type of setup also?
Most of my training is done one-on-one. I am involved in some group training, but I think for most students, it pays to be involved in a one-on-one situation, since people are at different skill levels and have different capabilities and different needs to work on. I think the best things nowadays, besides obviously my own training, would be sites like Card Runners and Poker X Factor and Deuces Cracked and Tournament Poker Edge, and there are a number of them. And, not to single out any one of them in particular, but most of the online training sites are just amazing value. I mean, you're paying $20 or $25 a month, and you're getting access to a number of great professionals, whether it's for tournaments or cash games. And the amount of information you get and the quality of the information relative to the price is just, it's basically amazing value. Compared to the books, which I think a lot of times the books become outdated by the time they're actually published, that's where I recommend going to. In addition to that, I spend a lot of time on the poker forums. 2+2 and Pocket Fives are the two big ones, and both of them have amazing information out there by, again, great players, and the price is amazing because it's absolutely free, and you get insight into some of the great players of our generation's mind. I know Greg, when he was coming up, posted a lot there, and a lot of people have given him credit for helping with their games. And, I've been reading the forums for a number of years, and it's really been instrumental in developing my thought process about poker.
Now, Greg, you were actually posting in some of the very earliest poker forums online, weren't you?
I used to be quite involved with RGP going back to, early mid-90s.
Mm-hmm.
And, was involved with 2+2 from the day it started.
Mm-hmm.
I would say, when I won the main event, I might have been considered like the main guy in the tournament forum on 2+2 at that time.
Because
there was only one tournament forum back then. It wasn't subdivided.
Right.
Because it wasn't, they're so huge now. You've got to not just, which tournament game and, on all the other stuff. But, and probably one of the reasons I failed to always maintain my pace of keeping up with poker developments is because I was so busy there for several years that I just stopped reading 2+2 for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't posting in that tournament forum and reading the threads and getting involved as new strategies and new thought processes were developed.
Right. Now, which brings me to my question for you, Ari, which is, if Greg was part of that generation of poker players who were online talking about it, having those conversations, Dennis and I are both middle-aged poker players, you're 27, 28 years old now, you are probably part of a generation that's being passed by the kids who are 7 to 10 years younger than you. Do you see people who are...
Whoa. 27 is not over the hill.
Well, that's what I'm asking you. Is there
virtually over the hill? I would say, yeah, definitely in the online generation, 27 is viewed as certainly above the median age of people that are doing really well at the highest stakes. And, yeah, I mean, I see a ton of guys coming up that are, you know, 18, 19, 20 and, you know, above that are, you know, just amazing poker players. And, you know, it's so easy to get complacent in this game. And if you do get complacent, you will get passed by. I mean, that's basically a fact. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's actually great for the game that you do have people that are, you know, constantly, you know, have that hunger to really develop their game and might not have the bankroll. So, you know, I think for a lot of people, getting that bankroll is devastating for their poker development because you kind of lose that hunger to learn and to play as well as you can when it doesn't mean as much. And, you know, a lot of these kids, you know, they're looking to, you know, break through. And, you know, it's amazing what it does for the level of skill of play. And, you know, I'm sure all of you guys, you know, you've all been playing a while. You can just tell the difference in tournament poker between now and 10 years ago. It's just a world of difference. Like it's like playing a different game almost.
Absolutely.
Well, you see, now there's poker etiquette. He said for you guys that have been playing for a while.
I heard it. One last question for you, Ari, before you go. How's your Diet Coke prop bet?
It's good. It was unbelievable. I was drinking for years and years and years. I was drinking, you know, upwards of 20 cans a day. And about 3 or 4 months ago, I decided to quit cold turkey. And my close friend, who Greg actually sucked out in the main event, he had the set of fours. And Greg had a flush draw. And another guy had a flush draw. Had to throw that in. But anyway, my close friend and I, we made a prop bet with each other to help us. You know, to help us both lay off the diet soda, where each time we drank a can of soda or 12 ounces worth, we would have to pay each other $20. And I'm glad to say that I have not had one soda since then, which has been, you know, a few months. He's had made a little bit of money off of him, but, you know, it's definitely obviously extremely healthy to not be doing that anymore. So I'm glad.
Ari, you've made hundreds of thousands of dollars as a poker player, and your big prop bet is for $20.
Oh, I'm the opposite. Like if there was one of these video crews following me around, they would get very bored very quickly. I live a lifestyle that's, you know, much more similar to you know, a person, I guess, with a square job is the way they would call it. I'm not much of a partier. I don't really do anything too crazy. $20 are my big profit. You know, I'm just a grinder, and I'm happy that I found poker.
Well, we appreciate you taking time to join us here today. It was nice meeting you earlier this week, and I'm sure we'll run into you again. Again, Ari's website, his poker training website, and his blog as well are at ariengel.com. Thanks so much, Ari.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
All right. Before we finish up here, I got one bit of business with you, Mr. Raymer. They've announced at the World Series of Poker this year that they're going to be doing heads-up rematches. They're going to bring back Chris Moneymaker and Semi Farha to play heads-up as they did in 2003 at the main event. They're going to bring back Johnny Chan and Phil Hellmuth to play heads-up as they did in 89. Fans are going to choose the third match. And the choices are last year's Duhamel versus Reisner, which pretty much wasn't really that much of a heads-up battle, Jamie Gold versus Paul Wasica from 06, Johnny Chan and Eric Seidel, the Rounders heads-up, as it's known, from 88, and you against David Williams from 2004. If you do get enough votes in this, do you want to play David heads-up, and how is it going to work? Do you have any details on this? Have they approached you?
No, they actually haven't said a word to me. I only know about it because what I've seen out in the public. I thought what I heard, though, is that they were going to play like best 2 out of 3 heads-up matches. But like the first match, like when David Williams and I got heads-up, there's 25, 26 million chips on the table, and the chip counts were something like 18 for me and 7 for him.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe the rematch is like, we play once where it's, again, just like it was. I have 18, he has 7. We play a second time where he gets 18 and I get 7.
Mm-hmm.
And if one of us hasn't won both of those, then the third match, the tiebreaker, is we just start with even stacks.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I thought I heard they were going to do with all these matches.
Mm-hmm.
And so I encourage everyone to go out and vote for me and David Williams because I very much would like to do this. To be honest, I think we're the only of the four matches, you know, and the three other matches, we're the only one. I mean, I don't think the race winner Duhamel. I don't think the Waseca Gold, I don't think those have any shot at winning this whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
I think David and I have a shot at winning because, mostly because 2004 was the highest ratings ever for the World Series of Poker on ESPN.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's more likely, unfortunately, that people are going to vote for the Johnny Chan-Eric Seidel match.
Yep.
And I don't blame them or anything. The only thing I have to say against it is that, like, well, why does Johnny get to play twice? You know, other than that, you know, so I don't, but I'd encourage everyone to vote for me just because I want to play. It'll be a lot of fun, and I'd like to do it.
Absolutely.
Well and poor Eric never makes the news anymore this year.
Yeah.
So,
you know, you're right. Eric has to be in one more event where he can make a big,
that's
big
true.
Payday.
Yeah, no kidding.
It is the year of Eric, so I probably am drawing dead already.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, give me you know, a quads on the flop, and I'm drawing dead because he's going to make the runner-runner straight flush.
Yeah.
It just hasn't happened yet.
Greg Raymer, the Fossil Man, thanks for joining us. It's been great having you here in town.
Thank you.
Dennis, are you headed off to Mohegan Sun tonight?
Yes, I'm catching the next flight out of here, heading out to the East Coast.
Playing the Bounty Shootout tomorrow?
Actually, I'm not. I'm going out there for a number of meetings. We've got some announcements that are hopefully going to be coming out in the next 3 or 4 weeks.
Okay, and as we go off the air, the main event of our circuit event, Kyle Cartwright is up to $5.6 million in chips, which is more than the other three players combined and doubled. Prohibitive chip leader at this point. Good luck to all four remaining guys.
Any prop bet that he'll finish fourth?
Thank you for listening. Check out our website, thechipleader.com, and subscribe to our show on iTunes. For Dennis Phillips and Greg Raymer, I'm Paul Harris. This is The Final Table on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com.